This morning, I was reading an article. And one thing before I start with that subject, it's interesting how in these news feeds, when you read things, often you understand that these writers, they make their money this way. So they're desperately trying to come up with new things to say or interesting things to say. And I do the same thing. For me to sit here and speak to you, I have to come up with something to say. That is not always easy. But this morning, it was really easy, or so I thought. So I'm reading this article. It's about a new medicine they're putting on the market. And it's for people who have migraines. It's a new migraine medicine. It's a nasal spray. You use it once a day.
Это лекарство для тех, у кого мигрень.
So for anybody who has migraines, as soon as somebody says they have a new medicine, immediately you want to know. So I'm reading the article. I get down near the bottom. And they explain how this medicine was tested. And like everything in medicine, there's the control group, the placebo. They get a placebo, and then there's those who get the real thing. Now, you would expect, right, that the placebo group would have basically no effect, and those who get the real thing would have a good effect if it was supposed to be a good medicine. You would think that way, correct? But in this case, the difference between the placebo group and the people having the medicine was very small. In fact, the way in which this medicine worked didn't help, definitely didn't help half the people. And the effect it had was not that great and not very different from the placebo. So one wonders, why should I buy this? But then I started thinking, well, was it effective for the group who was getting the placebo because they thought they were really getting the medicine and they created within themselves the good effect? But wait a minute, how much of the effect of the people taking the medicine was also placebo? The difference between the two was 7%. Seven. So if you were to take away the placebo effect from the medicine, that means the medicine only had a 7% effect. But nobody wrote about that. So that made me giggle. And then I became existential. How much of my life is the placebo effect? Very interesting. And then I was thinking, how much of spirituality is the placebo effect? But what is the placebo effect? I believe something to be true, so I create that environment which has its own set of effects. So what if what I believe to be true is true? Let's set aside absolutes of true and false just for a second. I believe it to be true. It has the effect of being true. It is true to me. So existentially speaking, does it matter? And why would it matter if it did matter? And if, let's say, spirituality is largely of my own doing, is there anything wrong with that? Is it something that is done to me, and therefore the placebo effect doesn't count? Just like the medicine is done to me. So is it done to me, or is it something I do to myself? If you remember many years ago, you may not remember, it doesn't matter. Many years ago, I gave a lecture It's in the audio part of Hari Media. Inside out versus outside in. And in fact, this kind of a dichotomy, which is not really a dichotomy, but this kind of discussion between these two seemingly different things is common throughout life. You could even say that at its extreme, you have fundamentalists who believe that everything is given to you from above, mercy. Whether you talk about this as medicine, or you talk about it as economy, or you talk about it politics, or you talk about it as religion, there's the two extremes. And then on the other extreme, you have someone like Jasmuhin, who everything is from within after you absorb. It's all from within. You don't even need food. You don't need all these things. Now, this is what's called a false dichotomy. This is a concept which is created to create this separation, that there is outside in, that there is inside out. That's not the discussion. The discussion is, why are these things pitted against each other? And that's the false dichotomy. Let's take, for example, that medicine we talked about in the beginning. The medicine goes in, but in reality, we heal ourselves from inside out. So what's the problem? The problem is that somebody believes the only way this works is if you take the medicine and pay me money for it. So for those people, the dichotomy is very important because it's a way they get richer. But if you think about anything, anywhere, at any time, everything is going outside in and inside out at the same time. It's a continuous cycle back and forth. Every single part of our life is a combination of things coming in and out. And as soon as this in and out cyclical pattern stops, we're dead. Even then, it doesn't stop. It's just it goes on without us, like the bugs are eating us and they digest us and so on. The in and out is still going on. So the interesting part is that belief that one may have that attaches itself to any part of this equation. And then it creates, when finding someone on the opposite side of that belief system, a conflict. We'll get back to that in a second, but let's talk about this placebo effect again. By my belief, by my conviction, my energy is focused. You see this in any athlete. In fact, this is a spiritual technique used in certain disciplines. You're completely focused on the task in front of you with nothing else in mind so that you can perform your feat perfectly. Or even children who have cancer, the most horrible situation, because they're so able to visualize and just consider their own cells so perfectly that they can just attack the cancer cell from within with their mind and their energy and their heart and their whole being. Now, let's just consider that for a second in our spiritual practices. Does the spiritual practice in and of itself create the effect we actually want? Or is it us who at one point understand that it is our focus and our energy and our discipline that creates the effect we want? We learn about the nature of spirituality. We learn about those things which are destructive to that nature. And we try to attune ourselves to that spiritual nature. We follow principles, we chant, or we hear, or we serve. These are good things. They're good things. And we expect result. We get result to some extent. But when we understand that the real last part of this equation, it's like an equation that goes from here to there. We get to baby here. The last part of the equation requires the inside out part. That our energy, our intention, our consciousness is focused on our desired effect. And when we connect in that way, when we synchronize in that way, when we tune to the deity, for example, the divine, in that way, everything makes sense. So when we feel that synchronization, we feel that tuning, we feel very much this flow back and forth of this energetic exchange, whatever we offer, whatever we do, whatever we might say, or how we might deal with others is reflected by that. Now, that includes that love, that feeling of love, that exchange of love. That includes that caring and that desire not to destroy or not to harm or disturb the beautiful arrangement of the divine. And it culminates in that embrace of Radha and Krishna. So all that we do spiritually, ultimately, totally and unescapably or inescapably boils down to our connection, our tuning, our synchronization, our feeling together with the Lord's. So it is a perfect continuum of outside in and inside out. And ultimately, all depends on how I feel, how I believe, how I relate, and therefore express. This is the secret of devotion. It's not something based in action, not something based in doing only. This doing and action is the methodology to bring us to pure being. Ultimately, at one point, it boils down to you. Here, all these things are given to you now. You take this, you absorb this, you understand the essence of this, and you reach out to the divine. But the first thing is not to reach out with simple desire or needs or wants. Just like astronomers, they have these amazing observatories. They're not reaching out like that. They're reaching out by just accepting all this light. They are just absorbing all that light on their sensors. Our task when we reach out is to become the perfect antenna or observatory for that energy of the divine that we simply absorb. It's not something that you can simply just be passive, you know, just passively absorb as if you were sitting in the sun. It's energetically active by which the absorption takes place to bring that energy to us. Because on this level of, of spirituality, this aspect of spirituality is totally active, not passive. That absorption of the love, the loving energy of the divine, that pure energy of the divine is an action, it's an activity, it's something you actively do. And that which you give in terms of your love being expressed to the divine, to the deity, to Radha and Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Lord Nityananda, it's an active expression. So this false dichotomy which is given is destructive to spiritual life, that it's either one way or another way. It's either this way or no way. It's a continuous exchange where impetus is given and expression is created. If you look anywhere in this world, you will see it's similar for everybody, everywhere, at all times. It's just labeled all differently, or it's completely distorted in the way in which it manifests. Everybody wants to love and be loved and feel a part of a group and to have social interaction. It's just that nature which we all share. We want to do something significant. We want to be appreciated for it. And so long as we can engage in a situation which facilitates this, we are happy in life. The difference between doing that in a way different than I just described and the way we do it is that ultimately all of these methodologies are temporary and they don't fulfill us in the same way because they deteriorate, they dissolve, they change, or we die or they die. Or that's the nature of it. Whereas when we have that connection to their lordships, it is so familiar, it is so natural, it is so eternal and can never be broken, and therefore very much satisfying. So back to the existential crisis. Is that just a belief? Is it true because I believe it's true? Or am I actually feeling it? At this point, only you can answer. So when you have answered, no one can challenge that. No matter what they tell you, how others may criticize you, you know what is real, you know what is true for you, and that's all that matters. So whether or not how you got there includes placebo effect or not, doesn't matter. The pain is gone. The disease is gone. Who cares why? I've got the divine. Who cares how I got here? I'm here. Good enough. But because you are there, you know very well how you got there. And you can say, it was this and this and this. And if somebody tries to tell you something else, you can say immediately, no, not that.
Будете опровергать это, говорит, нет, нет, я-то знаю, как на самом деле.
So it's very interesting when one gets to a certain place in spiritual life or just life, one doesn't really care anymore about other people's opinions because they're just like an annoyance.
И это интересно, что когда человек достигает определенного там, места или состояния в духовной жизни, или вообще в жизни, тогда человек уже по-настоящему, его особо не волнует чужое мнение, оно только вызывает, ну, как раздражение какое-то.
What can they give you that you don't already have?
В конце концов, даже если кто-то будет что вас подвергать сомнению или опровергать, что они могут вам дать лучше или больше того, что у вас уже есть?
So from that point of view, we're okay. And with that, I will take a break. Question number one. You can read number one in Russian. Why do we get angry when people don't perceive us as we are and think we are less than who we are? What is the nature of our desire to be accepted for who we are, for whom we define ourselves to be? That's a really good question. In fact, it's a whole lecture in and of itself. Well, if I were to think about myself, and when somebody does that to me, how do I feel? It just happened maybe 2 weeks ago. I was in a meeting. The meeting was supposed to be a certain way. It turned out to be something else because that person was trying to define me and what I was doing in another way. I got angry, but not for that reason. I got angry because I felt, well, this meeting should have gone like this, and it was supposed to go like this, and we had all accepted it would be like this, and now it's being deviated to something else. So when somebody does that in a way which ruins what I want to do, that creates, you know, pressure on me, stress on me, and I get upset. It's important to divide the way you feel according to how people act or think. That's why I'm doing this. So bear with me. I'm going to answer directly the question. Next sentences. It would be as if, you know, Vajra is now the boss, right? She's the boss of everything here. So if she were to say, you can't say that and mute me and block me. It doesn't matter why. It doesn't matter. If she were to act like that, I would get very upset. It's my lecture. How can you do that to me? And she may say, because you don't know what you're talking about. But that doesn't matter. It's my lecture. I can be an idiot if I want to. That's one way to look at it. Now, another way to look at it is the way the question is asked more directly. The question I would ask in this regard is, why get angry? I'm not saying that one shouldn't get angry or one would not get angry or I would never get angry. That's not what I'm saying. I would ask, why get angry? If somebody were to tell me, you're so short, I would go, huh? Why would I care? Yeah, I know I'm not short. Sure, I'm not like, you know, massive basketball player. But I'm not short. So because what they said was obviously, to me anyway, untrue, why would I get angry? I would just go, why? Similarly, if somebody were to say, you're in Maya, I would go, good grief. Now, what if somebody were to say something that I also believed to a certain extent, but I didn't want anyone to know? Then what if what they said scared me on some level deeply? Something like, you know, wow, you're not supposed to say that, that you can't say that to me. Sometimes we say the truth hurts. You know, if somebody says something to me about me which is just not true, you just disregard it. Or if somebody insists on having a opinion about me, which, you know, what can I do about it? It's just what they think. I can't do anything about it. So it doesn't bother me in the same way. But if I actually deep down believe something about myself or have a doubt about myself, and then that person says that to me, especially in public or especially where it's meaningful, it really affects me because it's something I'm trying to avoid or hide. I'd rather forget. And if that person who is saying that includes an energy of condemnation, of negativity, that's a whole new thing. So not only are they saying something which I don't want to deal with, or it's true, or I don't like to think about it, or it's doubt, I'm a doubt, and they include a condemning negative energy with it. Oh my God. And that becomes a big deal. What's actually happening there is the significant thing is the energy with which they are doing it. Like, if somebody were to say it with not a negative energy, you know, somebody were to say, you know, you're not that great looking, but I love you anyway. That doesn't bother you so much. But if somebody were to tell me, you're ugly as dirt, I don't want to see your face, get lost. I'm not good at being negative. You got to imagine this. Then it would really, you know, wow. Then we go into defensive mode and a battle goes on and we're angry. So what they're saying, even if they're not accepting us in a certain way, that's depending on their own point of view. It can also be due to ignorance. That's not really the issue. The issue is the energy that surrounds that statement. And that's what we react to. Very few people will see you who you are. Very few people will accept how wonderful you are. Those people who do are friends or family. The vast majority of people couldn't care less about you. And a very small group of people will be very envious or angry or just dislike or whatever. So how do you deal with the negativity? That's an art. You can just walk away from it, ignore it. You can consider that they are idiots. That's a very good way to be. I mean, this person is a total, complete idiot, and I don't care. That doesn't necessarily work all the time, but it sounds good. Or you can just be very confident in who you are. You know very well who you are. You know very well what you can do. You know very well how you can do it. And other people are just missing the point. And that's just the way it is. So appreciate the people who appreciate you the most. And be kind as much as we can. And caring as much as we can. And avoid those situations which have no benefit to anyone. So good question. Number two. Often atheists say about believers that they invented God for themselves and they feel good. And this is a placebo. But when we are in contact and we feel the energy of the deities, we receive messages from them. This is reality. This message is medicine is divine. What do you say about it? The same phenomenon for some as a placebo, for others, the medicine is obtained. Most of this question I've already, what happened to me? Hello, camera. Most of this I have discussed in the lecture, but what's interesting, the whole question is interesting, but what most I want to focus on is this idea that atheists say that we invented God to feel good, that we are living in placebo land. Just for fun, let's go back to discussing those who took the medicine, let's say 40% of them got a good effect. Those who took the placebo, 33% of them had a good effect. Let's just consider that. There weren't that many people in the test. So you subtract placebo from effect. Just to be sure, you don't have much in either camp. So one could tell the atheist, well, your feeling that there is no God and you're just living in this world is a placebo that you created to make yourself feel good. You've created your reality that there is no God. You've just created it to make yourself feel better. Because if there is no God, there's no judge up there. So you can do whatever you want. And when you die, it doesn't matter anyway. So you've created this reality to feel better about yourself. What's the difference? These two things negate each other philosophically. It's like saying, you breathe air, they breathe air. See? And everybody else says, so? You have placebo. You have placebo. No. It's a meaningless discussion. Because again, it boils down to belief. And the perfect response is, how is it working out for you? Are you a happy atheist? Are you a happy theist? How do you feel about the purpose of your life? Or do you consider it? What is important to you? Again, all of these considerations come in, but the concept of placebo or who creates what is not the issue. It's another false dichotomy, because everybody lives according to their beliefs. And we create these beliefs, or we embrace these beliefs based on our experience. Who's going to judge true or false? Let's say you believe at death there is nothing and you just, you know, dissolve into nothingness. Let's say at death you believe there's everything and you just go on living. Neither of us have direct perception of what's going to happen. We both believe, and we both have our evidence to prove what we believe. In fact, there's very few wars between the atheists and theists. But there's piles of wars between theists. Interesting. I'll leave that conclusion to yourself. Number three, who is really, a Vaishnava, and who is not? Of course, one who knows himself and does not need any definitions, but it is important for common understanding. Why, I ask? Why is it important? To who is it important? It's not important to me. Maha, is it important to you?
Who is Vaishnava, who is not? Not.
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 Raise your hand if you think it's important. Don't be afraid. I'm not going to condemn you. Okay. Gora, unmute him. I want to hear why. Okay. Let's hear it.
I was joking.
Oh, you were joking. I really wanted that. Okay, mute him. He's useless. I think the only reason it's important is if for some reason you only want to be together with someone you consider to be a Vaishnava, whatever that might mean to you. Or you're in a society or something like that, who insists you have to avoid anyone who's not Vaishnava. You can't have anyone who's not a Vaishnava in this society. I mean, when it boils right down to it, why is it important? I'm not sure, because it's not important to me. Well, yeah. Maha, can you think of any reason why it would be important whatsoever?
If I refer to philosophy, we have read like statements like at some stage of the advancement, a person can be capable to discriminate who is who, like who is more advanced, who is less advanced, who is Vaishnava, who is neophyte, who is like saint, I don't know, kind of property of intelligence was supposed to be, perhaps.
I think really ultimately Vaishnava is devotee of Vishnu, isn't it? Can you unmute Mara? I want him to explain.
He says, I just wanted to hear from you the definition of a Vaishnava.
Yeah, but my definition was very plain vanilla. I mean, if you think about it, someone may say, I'm a Vaishnava. But their realization or their experience, as you were starting to talk about, Maha, their realization or their experience or their activities, not necessarily what you would expect. If somebody says, I'm a devotee of Vishnu or Krishna, I'm a devotee. What does it mean? Well, it means you accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you're going to serve him. But you may not have much realization. So the idea of being a Vaishnava maybe is not as important as we might think it is according to the weight of the word. I'm going to move on because I think we're at the end of that. I know that there is a book, Vaishnavism Real and Apparent. One who seems to be a Vaishnava, but not isn't actually. But that's taking the definition and stretching it to include real with all these values that go along with it, symptoms that go along with it. It's a complicated process. I don't want to be involved in that process. There are plenty of others who like to do that. I'm not one of them. Okay, number four. You said that people like Jasmuheen first took into themselves the necessary divine energy support in order to then give out of themselves. In this vein, what can be said about what served as an incentive or a decisive factor for such people so that they could take in, first of all? Well, that's a really good question. Basically, you're asking, what makes Jasmuheen Jasmuheen? How did she become Jasmuheen? Did she wake up one morning and said, that's it with food?
Так ли это, что она однажды утром проснулась и сказала, все, хватит уже с меня этой еды всякой?
I'm going to live on light from now on.
С настоящего момента я буду жить только питаясь светом.
Well, no, she did not.
Ну нет, такого с ней не было.
She did what everybody does. She just happened to be really good at it. What everybody does, especially in the mystic processes, is they come to know themselves. And part of knowing self is knowing how one is able to relate to and manipulate for one's benefit energy. Other people may think that's, no, they're manipulating people, or they're manipulating businesses, or they're manipulating social media. But when you look at what they're doing, they are getting into the energy of the manipulation, and that is causing an expression which gives the desired result. So anyone who has a significant impact in this world has gone within somehow or another and figured out their way of doing it, of being it. In her case, you can just imagine she's sitting in meditation, wherever it might be, because she felt she needed to do that. And she's just feeling those energies and gradually understanding them and gradually experiencing them and attracting them more and experimenting.
В ее случае, вы можете себе это представить, как она это делает, она это сама описывает. Она садится в медитацию, и сидит в медитации подолгу, просто потому что в какой-то момент она почувствовала, что это ей нужно. И в этой медитации она старается очень хорошо ощущать собственную энергию, постепенно она учится, как с ней обращаться, как ее проявлять, как ее выражать.
And while she's doing that, by the way, she realizes, wait a minute, I'm not hungry. I don't need to eat. I don't need to stop doing this. I can sit in this solitary place even for a month and have no need of these things because I'm being nourished by all of this energy that I'm experiencing. And ultimately, the bodily cells work on energy. Doesn't matter how they got it. Awareness of the cellular interaction, awareness of all that life within the body, and how to flood it, nourish it with that energy. So I think that is the way in which everybody does everything, except that some people do it way better than others. The next one. Nowadays, in so many places are happening earthquakes. Can we say that Mother Earth is so much bored by our civilization and that is the reason of earthquakes? Well, action and reaction. But the principal word here in this question is Mother Earth is bored by our civilization. One could think of it like this, that people are simply, this whole human civilization is narcissistic. There is nothing more boring than being around a narcissist. They are the most boring persons in existence. Me, 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 me. So just imagine we have this human civilization that is based in narcissism and getting worse day by day. In my childhood or my teenagehood or young personhood, I never heard of a selfie. Taking a picture of yourself? Why in heaven's name would you take a picture of yourself? Can you imagine taking a picture of yourself and then putting it in the front of your house? Hi, this is me. Whole world is one big selfie nowadays. Me, me, me. The whole world is basically stoned out of its mind all the time. Drugs everywhere. Everybody is just self-absorbed. Even when they do charity, somehow there's self-absorption involved. And every single thing self-absorbed people do ends up harming someone somewhere. I'm not going to analyze that down to the what we do and how it creates reactions, but I'm simply going to say blanket statement. We have so screwed up this world by all the stuff we do and all the decisions we make. So what do we think is going to happen? Good things? All this narcissism is creating heat, acidity. Narcissism is acidic. And the balance that this earth has had so far is being totally upset. And we are just exploiting. So naturally earthquakes come. Naturally these problems come. So is the earth bored? Or is the earth just reacting? Yeah. Well, I know there's a lot more questions. Today there's piles of questions, but I'm kind of like at the end. All right, bye everybody. Wonderful to see you today. Thank you.